as we approach our four-year anniversary of the Old Frontline podcast, I look back over the episodes that we've made. What inspired me to start, to begin this podcast? How has it changed my view of that landscape of the Great War and the language by which we discuss it? And what have we done over these 4 years on that old front line? Incredibly, it's almost 4 years since the very first episode of this podcast was broadcast on the 29th of March 2020. None of us really needs to be reminded of the circumstances of that year, the year when all our lives, one way or another, stopped. It was a hard year, a difficult year, and we all found different ways to cope with it and found different paths to take ourselves away from the realities of the world we were living in, and paths that would perhaps take us down new avenues of our lives, and that was certainly the case for me. But there I was, I found myself as a battlefield guide with no access to the battlefields and no groups to guide. What to do with myself? It was a time to stop and pause and think, and initially I read quite a lot of Great War books to take my mind across to those battlefields that I suddenly realised I could no longer get to. And I'm sure for many it was a welcome pause where you could not work, you could stop, you could be with family, do whatever you wanted to a degree, being contained as we were. But I felt personally that I just couldn't kind of do nothing. And I began to think about a way of connecting to the battlefields, but then linking that connection to a wider audience in the way that we do with our battlefield tours with groups that we take year after year across that old front line. And I'd often thought about doing a First World War, a Great War podcast, because I'd worked with quite a few different people recording podcasts over the previous decade. I remember going right back to when Dan Snow first started doing podcasts, and he very kindly invited me on a number of times to talk to him about different aspects of the Battle of the Somme and tactics in the last 100 days of the First World War. And he said to me, "You should do a podcast, but when would I ever get the time to do it?" This was that time. That was what was really clear to me. This was that time to stop and pause and think about doing this podcast. So in March 2020, the working stopped, the world kind of stopped, and we all began to think about what we would do. I found myself confined to barracks, as it were, in my flat in Elsicker in South Yorkshire. I sat down and I thought, if I'm going to do this properly, I need to use the kit that I've got. I looked at GarageBand, which is a free bit of software to record audio onto, perfected a bit of the use of that, spent a little bit on a decent microphone, did a few test recordings, and then sat down and recorded my first episode 4 years ago in this coming week. Those 4 years have gone very, very quickly. And that first episode was recorded in my living room in the flat I was living in then. There was virtually no noise outside, so I didn't have to worry about cars going by and so on, except a bit of bird noise because the birds seemed very active that spring. And I recorded an episode about Pozieres. Why Pozieres? I mean, I think for some reason then Pozieres was on my mind. I'd only just come back from the Somme at the end of February. We'd done a recce looking at the behind the lines on the Somme front, and it had snowed right at the end of that. And the morning that we left, we went up to Maymay Communal Cemetery Extension in the snow. There was a thin layer of snow across the ground there, and the cemetery was quiet and cold. And we walked and looked at some of the headstones, and I thought about the time all those years before when I'd walked the Somme on my own to research my book, Walking the Somme. And even then I kind of began to reflect about the past, my own visits across that battlefield. And we said goodbye to the Somme that morning, not knowing then that that would be the last time that I would see it for quite some months. In fact, in the case of the Somme, it would be 18 months, nearly 2 years before I was back there. So the Somme and Pozières, I remember passing through the village and it kind of stirred up a few memories of visits past and people I'd known. That was on my mind, and that led to that first episode about Pozières, walking from Pozières British Cemetery and Memorial and talking about that, and up past the 1st Australian Division Memorial in Gibraltar, up into the village and talking about different aspects of that and heading up to the northern part of the village and the battlefields where the Australians had fought in July and August and September of 1916. And I listened today to that first episode and I can see how different it is 4 years on from what I produce now. I've got better kit, of course, to do that, and I've come a long way with the kind of editing of the podcast, but I think there's a lot more to it than that, which I, you know, think we'll discuss in this kind of anniversary podcast, if you like, looking back over those 4 years. And one thing that was there at the very beginning, as I mentioned, when I was recording it in my living room, there were no kind of modern world signs out there because the modern world had stopped. But it was the bird song. And bird song, as I've mentioned in quite a few podcasts, is something that kind of carries with me on all those trips to the battlefields and has done almost since the very beginning. And when I think of the battlefields, and whenever I'd been to them, particularly in recent years, the skylark singing high above the fields of Loos or on the scrubland of the Somme or in the open chalk downland of Arras or the Champagne and so many other places, they had really, just like the soldiers of the Great War who had heard them above the guns, they'd become, for me, a kind of beacon to the Great War, connection to the Great War. And when I thought about how would I actually make this podcast, calling on some of the kind of experience that I'd had through working in television for all those years, I thought we could use music. What kind of music would we use? And I did use a little bit, but that didn't seem right. But then I thought, skylarks, that's the music that we need. That's the only music that we need for this podcast. And that's what I used, and that's what I still use now. And that first episode now has been listened to a staggering 16,000 times, and the podcast has come a long way. But looking back to the beginning, kind of what did I hope to achieve really with the Old Frontline podcast? Well, I felt that all of those years that I tramped the battlefields of the Great War, I'd acquired knowledge, I'd heard stories, I'd read things in original documents and unit histories and war diaries and private papers and all kinds of things. And through interviewing, as I did in the 80s and 90s, over 350 Great War veterans, all kinds of anecdotal stories came from them. Oral history is a complex subject, and not every veteran was able to give me an official history account of the war. But that's kind of missing half the point of what veterans can give to you. And I decided early on with that, that although I met veterans who had bottled up that experience, and it all came flooding out, and in terms of the history, it's pretty accurate. Memory is a funny thing, and it can twist things, and I saw that with some veterans, but I never really found many who kind of deliberately distorted the truth. But I wasn't going to get the official history of the war through individual soldiers who were there. Even interviewing, as I was lucky to do, over 350 of them, it's a tiny fraction of the millions that served in the army during the war. I couldn't hope to get a kind of universal picture from just that many men, but what I could do was get an essence of it, an essence of the war experience, and compare that to earlier writing and men who had jotted down their memoirs in those classic books that we often talk about on this podcast. And I think what it gave me was a sense of the experience of war. So there was that kind of layer to it. And I wasn't using words like layers then, but looking back on it now, that's kind of what it was. And with all these different layers, the work that I'd done as a battlefield guide over many years, the way that you get to know ground and the way you talk about it and you try and describe it to people, I realised that there was a whole host of material that even in the books that I'd written, I couldn't really share in print. And somehow a podcast seemed the way to share that material, share it with a wider audience and hopefully kind of make something that was of interest to people. So what kind of style did I want to adopt? That was the other thing that I thought about. If I'm going to do this, what kind of style should I use? Should it be an academic style? Should I present the facts and debate them? Should I talk to someone else? I kind of thought about all that and I thought, really, what this might become, and to an essence, and I've said this to a few people, what this might become is a kind of confession, really, my confession, my walk around those battlefields and what I've seen and what I've done and what I've experienced and what it's made me think about the Great War. And there will be dipping into academic sides of it. I mean, I've read pretty much every academic book there is on the Great War over the years. But there's, I think, another level to this, the way of taking that kind of history and weaving it into the anecdotal, into the oral history, and into the history of the landscape. And the landscape of the Great War has always fascinated me, particularly having lived on that landscape and seen it every day for year after year after year, and seen it change in the seasons, and seeing how bits of the landscape can be unearthed by building or roadworks or whatever it is, and the secrets of that landscape are then exposed. So the kind of style that I wanted really is a style that if I was sitting down in a pub with a group of friends and we wanted to talk about the First World War, I wanted it to be accessible on that kind of level. But I wanted it to contain more than you could just find on the internet, on Wikipedia or on a web page. And thankfully, I was able to kind of call on, as I've said, all those years of visiting the battlefields and doing the things that I've done. And I've realised, I think, when I began to sit down and think about more episodes, I began to think to myself, you know, I have done some quite unusual things. I've been very lucky and privileged to do so many of the things that have happened in my life. And it's been good to kind of share those. And so I guess that led me to then think about, well, what do I feel the podcast would bring to our understanding of the Great War? And I think it does come back to that thing where a lot of this sometimes is information that I couldn't put in a book. I've put some of it in books that I've written, but books are one dimension of this. The podcast enables me to expand on it. I can talk for as little or as long as I want to on all kinds of diverse subjects. And here we are into these many, many episodes. And I'm often asked, have you kind of got to the end of your material? I kind of feel as if we're only just starting here, really. And that is the beauty, the pleasure of this subject, its depth, its breadth, and the elements and the layers, that language that we use, the layers of the Great War. And so the podcast kind of developed really from there. And I did initially wonder who would listen to this. But because this was a moment in which we all paused, podcasts suddenly came into their own. I mean, not just Great War podcasts, but all kinds of podcasts. People listened to them. They had time to do that. And that was a big factor, I'm sure, in the kind of listening figures that I got that were way, way beyond anything that I really anticipated and were beyond my expectations. And the fact that people did listen and they commented on social media, and that led to a podcast website where people could comment, and I started getting emails, it made me realise that there was an appetite for this, because I, again, going back a little bit, I remember on the 11th of November 2018, the end, if you like, of the Great War Centenary, people saying, that's it, First World War's finished now, we've done it, we've ticked that box, it's all ended. And I felt that I would never want to see that day where people felt that. It can't end, it can't just be consigned to the pages of history. It's too vivid, there's too much of it, there's too many voices, and there's things that we must never forget. And again, I guess that's all part of doing this. And obviously, when the podcast was released, there were people who kind of felt the same thing. And that was really, really nice to see. And I think as I began to record more and more episodes, doing the podcast changed not just how I actually discussed the Great War, but how I thought about it and the language that I used. And that was a really important part of it as well. It enabled me to pause, not just within my own life, but with this subject that has been part of my life for most of my life, and think about it, think about all the things that I'd seen, done, experienced, conversations that I'd had with other historians and authors and veterans and casual visitors to the battlefields. What did it all mean? What does the old front line mean? What is its culture? What is its language? And what can we make of it? And what does it mean? What relevance does it still have to us? And I found even more that that came into even sharper focus when, in that gap between lockdowns, I managed to get over to the Western Front, having thought in the spring that I might never see it again. I managed to get over that summer in July 2020 with my two friends, Mark Allen and Tim Thurlow, fellow battlefield guides. And we stayed at Nick Hoog's cottage right on the front line there in a lovely summer week where the weather was fantastic. And we sat there in the garden. We looked towards the spires of Ypres, marvelling that we were there after all that had happened. And going back and walking and talking to some of the gardeners who were really pleased to see us in the cemeteries, they too perhaps thought that they'd never see visitors again. It kind of brought it even to even sharper focus. And it kind of grew from there. And after that trip, because of what happened next and the complexities of going over to Europe, I didn't get back to the battlefields until September 2021. And that autumn was pretty action-packed with visits to the battlefields over for the 11th of November, taking an Irish group to the centenary of the Ulster Tower. And all of that kind of wove into what I was then doing with the podcast. And we were kind of a year and a half into it by then. And it really, the podcast, I think, had taken on its own momentum in many ways by then, and it continues to do so. So doing this, really, I think, coming back to the kind of core principles of it, by making this podcast, by recording these podcasts, by thinking about the subjects for these podcasts, I found a language for the Great War, which had previously kind of buzzed around in my head in a vague kind of way. And here it was all brought together, and it didn't really then have anywhere to go, but now it did. And I could talk about and think about, kind of thinking live as I spoke to you about those criss-cross paths of the Great War. What did that mean? What did it tell us? I could discuss that the last page of the history of the Great War would never be turned, because every time we went back, we discovered something new, and archaeologists like Simon Verdingham are literally peeling back the landscape to discover new facts, new stories, and new aspects, new levels, layers of the Great War. And that idea of layers of the Great War as well was another key aspect of this language that I was kind of honing as I made these podcasts. And to think as I did is that this idea of beacons of the Great War, the Skylarks being beacons, but the cemeteries, the silent cities, not there by accident, there for a reason, purpose, recalling an incident, a time frame, a unit, an action, even an individual death. All of that meant something. And then the wider aspect of it, which I come back to time and time again, and that is the whole meaning of landscape, the landscape of the Great War, the contemporary landscape during the war itself, what that was like, the development of the landscape post-war, and the landscape as we know it today, and the changing landscape that I've seen in over 40 years of visiting these battlefields. And the podcast gave me an opportunity to think about that and develop that. Now, I haven't invented these things. I'm not the only one that thinks this way. But the podcast has given me a way to verbalise this. And it's been great to hear from so many people who think the same way, who I've kind of said things that they too had thought about but couldn't quite pin it down. And that's, I guess, where our joint crisscross paths of the Great War have come together with this. And through the development of this podcast, we've also developed, through you, the listeners, a Great War community. Whether that's been guests, I was really pleased to have my old pal Tim Thurlow on a very early episode. I think he was the very first person I interviewed on the podcast, where he spoke about his connection to the Somme battlefields, what it meant to him, and walking across that landscape and finding the detritus of war, the artifacts, and what it felt like for him to reach out and touch those artifacts and think about who had last seen them, last touched them, and what had happened to bring those objects to that place. So we spoke to Tim, and then we went on to speak to authors, Great War authors that I've liked and admired and who are friends. People like Professor Peter Doyle, Richard Van Emden. They gave great interviews talking about the work that they'd done. And it's always a pleasure to talk to them about the Great War. And I've been pleased as well to highlight the work of female historians in the Great War. And there are so many. Having been inspired by two great female historians in my early years of visiting the battlefields, Rose Coombs, who wrote Before Endeavours Fade, and when she was Special Collections Officer at the Imperial War Museum, did so much to help me and many other people, and Lynn MacDonald with her incredible series of books that I'm sure has inspired one way or another, probably all of us, that kind of connected to the Great War, and many of you listening to this podcast. So it's been good to get female historians on the podcast to talk about their work on an international level. So we had Mathilde Bernadet from France talking about France and the Great War, Amy Harrison, who's a PhD student and now lecturer at the University of Kent, talking about battlefield tourism, Samantha Cowan from Canada talking about Canada's involvement and what brings Canadians back to the battlefields. And we've gone beyond that to interview, as we did last summer, just before I left South Yorkshire, my old friend Beverly Palin, who spoke about the music of the Great War and how that connects to the story of the men and the generation of 1914-18, what music meant to them, and then to hear those incredible sounds of the instruments that she played. So it's been good to do all of that, and we will continue to do that. This is not a traditional kind of podcast where we just have guests on it. The guests that I choose them carefully because I want them to have some key messages, some layers of the Great War to talk about to you. And we've had some really superb guests on, and we will have some more. And then, of course, as part of that community, it's not just about guests. The community is you, the listeners. You have made this community. You have supported this podcast just by listening to it, by downloading it on whatever device you use. And it's quite a variety of devices, from smart speakers to mobile phones to computers to tablets, all sorts. You have helped build this community, and many of you have gone on to so kindly financially support the podcast via Patreon or Buy Me a Coffee, which has then enabled me to buy new material for the podcast, to tell some of these stories, equipment to record it, and finance additional trips out to the battlefields to make recordings there. And that, I can't thank you enough for that. And as part of that, those of you who do support the podcast in that way, there are benefits that you get back. We have regular supporters meetings where I give a talk once a month, or we get a guest in, or we have a joint discussion about books or questions about aspects of the Great War. There's a monthly newsletter. And then this spring, later this month, in fact, not long after this podcast goes out, will be the first podcast meetup on the battlefields, when a group of you will join me at Ypres, and we're going to walk part of the battlefields there and see some sights within the city, and that'll be great. And that is not a one-off. It's something that I plan to do on a regular basis going forward. It's kind of an experiment that weekend to see if it works and to see if those who come on it kind of get something from it. So if you didn't manage to get a ticket for that, it went pretty quickly, in fact within just a few hours of it being advertised, then don't worry, because there will be more of those down the line. So I think kind of building this community is a good thing, because it brings people together. For a long time, in my early years of being interested in the Great War, it was a long time ago when there were far fewer people, of course, but there's a kind of sense that perhaps you're the only one. And when you meet people through communities like this, you realise that you aren't. There are others who share those same views, same passions for the Great War that you have. And that's really important, I think. And hopefully that means that the kind of community works in a way for all, that people benefit through the joy of association with fellow enthusiasts. And I think it's important. I mean, this isn't the only Great War community out there. There are many others, associations and groups. And that's really good too, because it means the Great War has a voice. When I, again, go back to those early years, things disappeared on the Western Front battlefields because the Great War did not have a voice. It didn't have groups of people who could speak up for it. So these communities, you know, are really important parts of that, and helping preserve things and helping raise a wider public awareness of the Great War and that landscape of the battlefields of the Great War. So kind of going forward, there's lots of things that I plan to do with this. I certainly don't intend stopping. We're not running out of material. Hopefully the March meetup at Ypres will be the first of many. And this year, I properly kind of launched the YouTube channel as well, with some film that I took last year using a proper 4K camera. I had to get a new Mac to edit that, which I've done, and I put a whole load of films onto the YouTube channel. And hopefully there are some more coming soon. And again, working with my old pal, John Hayes Fisher, we're going to do some films together on that, and there'll be lots of little shorts like I've put on there. So hopefully that'll add, it's not an alternative to the podcast. What I hope is that it will be another one of these layers of the podcast, where we can use the visuals of a vlog, a video blog, to kind of talk about battlefields, describe and visualize battlefields in a way that we can't just do with an audio recording. So more of all that soon. So when I look back over the 4 years of this podcast and all the podcasts that we've done, something like 180 episodes nearly now, and 1.3 million downloads, I mean, that is just staggering. I mean, when we got to a million downloads, I was absolutely knocked off my feet by that. To think that an independent podcast with no big backers, not part of a wider podcast network, could get to that kind of level, that is just amazing. And that is down to all of you supporting and listening and doing all the things that you do. And thank you so much for that. But what are some of my own personal favourites when I look back over those episodes? Well, going back to those original recordings, when I sat in my flat in Elsica and I could hear the blackbirds and the chiff-chaffs outside in the woods just beyond the street where I lived, that episode that I did on about birds on the Western Front meant a lot to me. It's not just about pigeons, Speckled Jim delivering messages and getting eaten. It's about the whole way that birds were part of that landscape of the First World War, during the First World War, and still are. And it was a real pleasure for me to record that. The Art of War, where I did an episode about war art and some of the war artists, that was also a personal favourite. The art of the Great War is something that has fascinated me since I first went to the Imperial War Museum in the 1970s as a kid and stood there in front of Gassed, that massive painting showing men gassed in the First World War, which we discussed in a recent podcast about the new exhibition, the new gallery at the Imperial War Museum. It's fascinated me, and the artists themselves have fascinated me. And that episode, The Art of War, I hope is the first of many, where we will look at different war artists and how they contributed to our understanding of the Great War. And I've realised as I've got older and I've travelled the battlefields and I've photographed them, how much that art really has influenced how I see the battlefields as they are now. And I find myself consciously, subconsciously, almost replicating some of those paintings in the landscape that I find more than a century later. The episode on Hawthorne Ridge was special to me because of Eric Heaton. And it's really lovely to see on social media how many people now go to Eric's grave at Hawthorne Ridge No. 1 Cemetery near Beaumont Hamel on the Somme and read or listen to the podcast even, but they read that letter of Eric's that he wrote home from Ocean Villas on the night before the battle to his parents in case he fell. And fall he did. He died on the first day of the Battle of the Somme. And to tell his story in that podcast meant a lot to me because of my personal connection to his family all those years ago. He became, and he's one of many for me, one of those lodestars of the Great War, one of those people that I think of every time I go back there and his grave that I try to gravitate back towards on all those trips that I make to the Somme. And the Somme will be forever part of this podcast. It runs through me because of all those years that I lived there. And the episodes that I did about Courcelette and Regina Trench and the Canadians at Courcelette, again, that's a real pleasure to kind of put that across. And that is something, again, I'm sure we will return to because I've only told you half the stories, really, of some of the things that I experienced and lived through and found out through writing about Courcelette, living at Courcelette and kind of almost living it when I was there in terms of how the landscape was there around me and I saw it every day. And the film episodes, you know, we've looked at arts. I mean, film is another extension of arts or part of the arts. And film and our understanding of the Great War is vitally important. And we've had a lot. We've been spoiled in recent years with 1917 and the new version of All Quiet on the Western Front. Not everybody's cup of tea with either of those movies, but it's important to discuss them. And when I've kind of given my thoughts on these films, this is not me saying, this is what this film is. It's me saying, this is kind of what I think about it. This is what I think it relates to in terms of the history of the Great War and the landscape of the Great War. And it's been great to kind of have some really friendly exchanges with people on social media or on the podcast website where they have a different opinion. Film is so vivid and vital. And it's good that we don't all see it the same way. It would be boring if we all felt the same way about every film that had ever been made. And part of the joy of film is to discuss it and to think about whether it does tell a truth or it doesn't. And I think that's an important thing, that the kind of friendly discussion about these films. And who knows, you know, with the success of Masters of the Air, I tweeted Tom Hanks. I don't know if Tom Hanks ever looks at his own Twitter account, but I tweeted him and said, come on, Tom, it'd be great to make a drama series about America in the Great War. And it could begin with American volunteers like Alan Seeger joining the French Foreign Legion and then the arrival of American troops. This is not about rewriting the history of the Great War to tell a new audience that America won it. But that war in America is forgotten. And it breaks my heart when I walk those American Expeditionary Force battlefields, the AEF battlefields of the Great War. Next week I will be at Kunel near Romania in the Meuse-Argonne Offensive, a bloody, bloody corner of that battlefield. And if that was ever a place that should be a drama, well, Tom Hanks, please listen, please do something with it. Maybe not Tom, maybe someone else, but who knows? I have a feeling that the success of film about war in a time in which we're living through a new war in Europe is something that will continue, and we may well see that being returned to in terms of the Great War. So those are some of my favourites when it comes to the podcast. What about listeners' favourites? And that's kind of perhaps more important, because if an episode's no good, you're not going to listen to it. Well, the most popular episode now is the Western Front World War I Trench Warfare, where in just over an hour I kind of ran through what trench warfare was all about. That seems to have been picked up by the educators in Britain, teachers who are sharing it on their platforms, and that's really great. I'd hoped that it would help teachers. Teachers do such a vital, vital role. They're part of such a vital role of educating a new generation about the Great War. And if we can do something to help them, we should. And that is now the most listened to episode with over 17,000 downloads in its own right. Posier is not far behind that, the very first episode, and I'm not surprised that's the most listened to otherwise, because it's been there the longest. But in terms of other things, in what have really inspired people to listen, Eat Battlefield Archaeology, which is an early one where we spoke about the work of the diggers at Bosinger and the film that I was involved in, The Forgotten Battlefield. That's a very popular one. And the Battlefields in a Day episodes, where we take a particular battlefield and we look at some of the key sites and see what we could see in a day, if a day is all we had. And Vimy Ridge in a Day and Somme in a Day are both really, really popular episodes of that Battlefields in the Day series. And there will be more of those coming this year because they are very popular. And it's really nice again to see people using them to go out and visit places that they haven't seen before, or go to Ypres or the Somme for the first time. So we've all come a long way, really, since March 2020. And it's staggering sitting here now, I think that's 4 years ago. And other Great War podcasts have come along too. Some already existed, like Mike Cunha's Battles of the First World War podcast. And I've said this a few times, but I remember sitting in Verdun during the centenary of the battle and listening to some of Mike's episodes about Verdun. Really fantastic work by him. A real pioneer when it comes to First World War podcasts. But then we've seen others from Matt Dixon and Terry Wenham. And it was pleasing to have Matt and Terry and Mike on the joint podcast that we did earlier this season, where we spoke about podcasting and the Great War. And recently there's been some new ones as well, with Great War academics talking about the First World War. And I hope that 4 years from now, you know, we're 4 years into this podcast, but 4 years from now, we will still be here, you know, everything willing. And I'd hope that there would be other podcasts. This is something I say a lot. I really hope that the success of these Great War podcasts inspires others to take up that mantle and continue and tell their stories. And I know there's one in the pipeline now. So it's really good to see the development of these podcasts, which all help tell the tale of the Great War. They all add something to it. And I listen to all of them. And it's really important that we do. They make me think, and I hope that the old frontline makes some of them think about things too. And we're not in competition with each other. This is all part, I would hope, of the same group of people working towards the same objective. And when I look back to that first episode, I told you the story of two old friends on the Somme who lived in Pozières, Christiane and Yves Foucault. They were two old friends. I used to kind of describe them as my French grandparents, and I met them very, very early on in my visits to the Somme. And I knew Yves in the remaining years of his life until he died in 1997, and Christiane until she died about 18 months ago. So when I first recorded that episode number one, she was still alive, still living in Pozières, and I mentioned her and her garden full of shell cases and all kinds of Great War detritus. She's now passed. Her and Yves lie together in the communal cemetery at Pozières. And if you're ever travelling on that road between Pozières and Thiepval, as you come out the village and turn the corner and the civil cemetery is on the left-hand side, Yves and Christiane are buried in there with their son, who died as a very young man. And they're names that are not particularly familiar to most visitors who go to the Somme, but they were part of the texture of the Somme to me. Yves, a Wargraves gardener from 1947 until the early 1990s, and worked in so many silent cities on the Somme, and had an intimate, incredible knowledge of the landscape of the Somme battlefields, and an amazing private museum. Christiane, great friend of so many visitors, took Australians in, took Canadians in, did so much. Those kind of people, those pages of the Great War perhaps have turned, and that history perhaps has passed. But while that makes me sad, it makes me realise too how it all goes on, how those battlefields change and also never change, how the voices of the Great War haunt those lanes and fields and woods. and how much more that landscape has to teach us, and how it will always remain, somehow, unquiet, a special place, a haunting place, forever mine, forever yours. And while the veterans may have gone, for those who tune into that wavelength of the Great War, it will always be our own very special old front line. You've been listening to an episode of The Old Front Line with me, military historian Paul Reed. You can follow me on Twitter at SomCor. You can follow the podcast at Old Front Line Pod. Check out the website at oldfrontline.co.uk, where you'll find lots of podcast extras and photographs and links to books that are mentioned in the podcast. And if you feel like supporting us, you can go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/oldfrontline, or support us on Buy Me A Coffee at buymeacoffee.com/oldfrontline.